Welcome to No Hype, the podcast about truth, science, and the future of marketing. Brought to you by your hosts, Allison Dietz
and Brett Haas.
Hello, and welcome back to No Hype, where we continue to showcase the incredible speakers and panelists from our Brave New Worlds 2023 event in downtown Chicago. So what is Brave New Worlds, you might ask? If you haven't had a chance to listen to our other No Hype episodes featuring our event, let me bring you up to speed really quick. Brave New Worlds is our marketing industry event, and we host it annually. It focuses on the biggest evolutions and disruptions across the marketing world and the things that people are doing to address those changes. Brett, you want to talk a little bit more about the session we're actually going to cover today?
Yeah, sure, Allison. In today's episode, we're sharing the session called Measurement is a Team Sport, where we dive into the components of a data-driven analytics, attribution, and marketing approach, and how CMOs fundamentally think about that in today's really challenging marketing ecosystem. The session features our very own EVP of Marketing Solutions, Michael Schoen, sitting down with Melissa Grady-Diaz, the CMO of Cadillac. And for those of you who are unaware of Michael, he's been extremely active in the industry representing TransUnion and our marketing solutions business. You might have seen him speak this past year at the MMA Global CEO and CMO Summit, possible, or even with one of the many working groups or boards he sits on across the marketing and advertising ecosystem with ICOM, the Interactive Advertising Bureau, et cetera.
Yeah, and obviously I think a lot of people are familiar with Melissa, but you know, she leads strategic marketing for the Cadillac brand around the world, which is, you know, one of the most well-known brands. And prior to Cadillac, she actually led major initiatives across many different brands, including Jackson Hewitt, MetLife, Motorola. So she's got tons of experience with digital marketing and e-commerce strategies, which really what led her to Cadillac initially as the director of media and performance marketing. So she really comes with this data-driven performance background. And those experiences have laid a solid foundation for her as she focuses on data-driven marketing today.
We've heard a lot of talk about a phrase that Forrester coined a couple of years back called data deprecation, which kind of makes most of us, I know me, assume that that is referencing kind of a dearth or a lack of data in the industry. But in reality, and Melissa Grady-Diaz makes this pretty clear, there's actually more data accessible to advertisers than there ever has been. It's just fragmented. It's behind gated or walled garden ecosystems and media platforms and other retail media networks, et cetera. And that's creating a lot of challenges for marketers to connect the dots when it comes to either marketing activation, marketing attribution, or measurement.
Yeah, I mean, data deprecation is such a consistently hot topic and really, you know, caused by the idea of consumer privacy and a rise in privacy concerns. And I found really interesting that there's almost this prediction that changes to how we manage consumer privacy and data transparency, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And we actually see this theme come out in other sessions as well. So it was sort of a consistent theme that we heard that the death of the cookie isn't necessarily a bad thing. But what Melissa highlights, which I found really interesting, is this opportunity for consumers to be more aware of what their data is actually worth and to be in the driver's seat. So when you ask consumers to make visible choices about their data and their privacy, then they can easily see how their experience changes when they share data versus when they don't share their data. And that transparency and that visibility gives consumers a chance to have more control, but also gives the marketers more control of, you know, helping them to show that there is that value exchange. And so, you know, as more and more consumers start to think about, you know, do I want to subscribe to this or do I not want to subscribe to that? You know, it starts to open up an opportunity for them to be more aware of the fact that they're trading their data and some of their purchasing behavior, their media behavior, they're trading that value exchange. It gives them greater content, greater experiences, and it starts to become more of a dialogue between the ad ecosystem and consumers.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Cadillac and Melissa made very clear that they put, you know, they really put on a consumer first lens that really comes down to leveraging the right data and partnerships across their sort of marketing, the Cadillac marketing ecosystem, to enable them to sort of connect the dots. And she referenced in this Fireside a couple of times, that her sort of nirvana, her utopia, is this ability to reach 100% of her target audience at any point in time. Now, getting to that point is much harder. And she sort of explains that voyage and the voyage that Cadillac and her teams are going through to really help not only piece together the data that they do have around consumers, but building out their partner ecosystem to enable them to more effectively reach as much of their target audience as possible.
Yeah. I mean, she talked a little bit about how trustworthy partners in the ecosystem really play a role there for them and helping them to craft these customer experiences. She was talking about their mobile app and it helps them to sort of build more meaningful applications and experiences because they're able to connect the dots. Like, I loved her example when she was talking about being able to tell Alexa that they're heading to Starbucks and to order their favorite drink and having the navigation set up and ready to get you there. Sort of that like fluid consumer experience that all of your technology kind of works together to get you the experience and the perfect morning that you want to have on your way to work. So I just think that that's so smart how data can help empower them to drive those more meaningful experiences.
And experiences post-sales, right? So it's not just a customer acquisition play. It's once somebody's in a car driving a Cadillac of some type around that they're having this continuous experience with the brand. And that helps retention, it helps advocacy, it helps all these other sort of post-sales marketing strategies, which I think is important. It's sort of looking at the consumer, the customer through a lens that isn't just oriented around short-term customer acquisition, and it's looking at their entire experience with your brand from beginning to end.
Right. And really data powers that. So it was really clear how data can help power their marketing strategies and help them make better decisions about how to engage their consumers, but also continue to add new customers to the portfolio. So I thought it was a great discussion with these two. So maybe let's pass it over to them and let the audience listen into the discussion.
Hello again. Thank you for joining us. I'm glad you could be here today.
Thanks for having me.
As Matt teased before the break, the next couple of sessions are going to be about measurement, which obviously we at TransUnion believe is really important.
Near and dear to my heart.
I believe that. and, you know, measurement is really important, an effective measurement strategy in order to ensure that you can understand and optimize your marketing investments and ensure, as we discussed in some of the earlier panels, you know, real alignment with the business outcomes with senior leadership at the company. And measurement is getting harder as a result of media fragmentation. And at the same time, there's never been more data about consumers, but that data is less concentrated and it creates additional challenge for executing on a cross-channel strategy, both for measurement and for activation. So the conversation we're going to have today, our intention is to shed some light on how expert marketers like yourself navigate those challenges and how you can develop a unified consumer data strategy that allows you to effectively navigate through those challenges and develop an effective marketing strategy. And when I think about that challenge, think about the solution around kind of three core pillars. And the first pillar is a customer strategy that really centers the consumer. And focuses on relationships over time and not transactions. And I'll call out to kind of Lou's drop the mic moment earlier today where Lou, I think you said, stop targeting customers, start cultivating them.
Yes.
Which kind of at the heart of the idea of having a customer-centered strategy. Then the second pillar is a data and consumer identity strategy and one that is built on trust and transparency so the consumer understands the way in which their data is going to be used. Yep. And then finally, a measurement strategy that leverages those two prior pillars and builds on them to deliver effective insights for measuring an incremental ROI. So first question for you is, does that make any sense at all? Am I full of shit?
You know, I don't know, Michael. No, I'm kidding. I think it's so aligned with the way that we approach things. And it's interesting, I think, in all the things that I've done in my career and at GM, what we've really been doing, and I think we do pretty well, is we start with the customer always. and we have been working with TransUnion and working with Dentsu, we've modeled out the whole U.S., and we know who are, I call them our future customers. We know who we want to be our future customers. And that is where we start with everything that we do, and it aligns right in the middle of your first two pillars there, I think, because it helps us to look at the ecosystem holistically, and it also helps us look at consumers as human beings. Because what happens, and as you said, it was so interesting to like, I hadn't thought about the fact of how much more data we have now, because it is getting so fragmented. It feels like we're getting into a time of less data, but we actually aren't. And it's all about how we put that together. So we start with the people. The next thing we really look at is insight. So we look at that data and we try to understand who are these people, where do we have possibilities of interacting with them, what motivates them. And then the third part, and our third pillar, which, and I think they're not exactly aligned, but pretty similar, is we then take that, understand where those people are, and we can really connect with them. And then once we connect with them, how do we know that happened, and how do we measure that? And that's a person, that's not an impression on Facebook separate from an impression on Hulu separate from an impression anywhere else.
Right.
And I think we'll get into a lot of that conversation of why that's so important.
So before we move on, though, I want to push a little bit on the kind of purity of your customer centricity, because we're talking a little bit about, are you really focused on the consumer and what they want versus how Cadillac as a brand is thinking about the consumer versus potentially other brands that are part of the GM family?
Yeah, I think the first thing is we really try to focus on the consumer first. It's really important, and it's something that it's a funny thing to say, but I've said this in a lot of meetings. Think about yourself, like these are human beings we're talking to. Think about yourself and how frustrating it is when you're dealing with an organization and they're talking to you in one channel as if you're a completely different person and without any like knowledge of another interaction that happened. And so as we look at these things, what becomes more and more important is how we tie things together on the back end. Mm-hmm. It benefits us, right? It's gonna benefit us. But in the end, and I think as we talk about transparency and trust and what consumers want to be recognized. And I really think it's as a separate thing. I think something that's really interesting that will come in the world is, especially if you talk to the younger generation, they already know this, they understand what their data's worth. And so as you look at how people are interacting with companies, I think we're going to go less and less to just opting out. And it's, I actually think, and I'm getting a little bit esoteric here, but I actually think going cookieless is going to help us in this. Mm-hmm. Because as people start to say, I don't want cookies, and they like are, you know, people will learn, they'll reject all cookies, and suddenly the site doesn't know who they are, they can't relog. Like those types of things are going to start to understand, wait, I actually do want something. The other thing that I think is going to play into this is subscriptions. And people are getting subscription fatigue. And that's going to have people start to understand the value of their data.
Right.
I want that for free. I don't want to pay $6 a month, $8 a month, whatever. So as we get into those things, I think that data transparency and people wanting their data to be used are really going to help us start to pull those all things together.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that, that effectively the proliferation of the subscriptions provides a currency for folks to think about what the value exchange is in non-subscription environments. Yep. In an ad-supported environment, what is the actual value exchange happening?
And then we as marketers, what do we do to provide value versus disruption.
Right. Okay. Well, since you teed it up then, let me ask the question around how you think about that trust and transparency, and how do you ensure that the way in which you're leveraging consumers' data upholds the kind of consumer's expectation and also increased regulatory environment, and how do you navigate that?
I think there's two key sides to that. The first one is that GM is very conservative and careful, and we really try to make sure that people understand how to have control, and we really protect their data. The second part of that, and I think it's maybe at least as important, is the partners that we work with and making sure that the partners that we work with also have really high standards, have data security, and are working in a privacy safe and transparent way.
Right. Okay. And I imagine also as, you know, you have consumers increasingly opting into some of the GM-specific data sources, that there's obviously a lot of security around that, and to ensuring folks understand, consumers understand what it is that they're allowing to be tracked and how that data will be used.
Yeah, and we're also very careful internally on what is something where we're recognizing someone, you're signing into the app, you're doing this, and where are places where we aggregate and anonymize data.
Right.
Because we don't need to know who that person is. We need things more on the aggregate.
Right. Okay. All right, so moving on then to a little bit more of the kind of nitty-gritty of measurement. We heard in a panel earlier today that in some environments, even just understanding reach and frequency is a challenge. Obviously, you've advanced kind of well beyond that. Can you talk a little bit about how you've approached getting a really good understanding of incremental ROI across your cross-channel strategy?
Reach and frequency is one of my favorite things, and we're not there, but like I talk to all of our great partners about this a lot. I really want us to redefine reach and frequency as an industry. There's a few reasons why, and I think we're at a place where we can really do this. I literally think it's all at our fingertips now, and I think we're pretty close in a lot of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But you know, reach and frequency has been for years and years about we reached 75-80% of our customers 2 to 3 times, wherever we are with our, you know, looking at TRPs. Well, as linear TV viewing is going down, as everything else that we're doing is really going up as part of the portfolio, that metric gets less and less meaningful. But what's so amazing, and just as a quick aside again, I said it quickly before, we work with Dentsu as our agency, and we're using their Mercury M1 platform. That gives us all the customers in the US an identity. We work with TransUnion and Neustar on our measurement and MIO solution, which is getting us the measurement. This gives us two, I think of this, even though it's not our data, I think of this as our first party data. Because we know who everyone is, and because we're working on, you know, how do we look at targeting, and when we look at how we target people, and I'm gonna get back to reach and frequency, I swear. When we look at how we target people, we look at it in basically three buckets. Where are we doing a direct connection? Where do we have a partnership and a clean room and we have a direct connection? Where are we doing this through cookies or through a different partner in a more probabilistic but a one-to-one match way? And where are we really looking at how we index, how an audience indexes? If we take those three buckets and we lay those out in how we target people and then in how we measure, we can then, and it's probabilistically, but by each person say, we believe Melissa has been reached 7 times in these channels. And sorry, we haven't gotten to you yet.
Right.
And once we know that on an individual level and we can map that back, we can then go looking at where the media is being bought and say, okay, well, we know optimal frequency is here. We're gonna now extend our reach. And you almost, instead of having this curve, you almost have deciles of reach and frequency. And where you're good, you're good. And then where you haven't reached people yet, you start to look at incremental reach. And we're so close to being able to do this. And then the definition of reach and frequency becomes something completely different. And then we can close loop this too, look at sales and see where we're winning and losing.
Right, so reach and frequency is not just an outcome, but really kind of an input back into the feedback loop.
Exactly, full ecosystem.
Right, right, okay, that's great. Could you talk a little bit about some of the innovative data sets you've begun to incorporate into your measurement solution?
Yeah, I think there's a lot on this. I think where we're looking at the different data sets of measurement, one of the ones that we're working on is with Polk and getting sales data in. So this will give us a full closed loop. And with automotive, that data shows you not only you but your competitors. So to me, this is going to be one of the biggest game changers, because we can start to say, here is our reach, here's our frequency, understand that. And here's where we won. And also really importantly, here's where we lost.
Right.
And how do we start to do that? So I think that's one of the bigger ones. Also, just working with a lot of other partners on getting impression level data back.
Yeah.
By person.
Yeah, the idea that you can leverage this measurement solution to really understand the impact of your marketing campaigns on a conquesting perspective is really interesting.
Yeah.
Where you have success success conquesting versus where you may be having less success.
Yep.
Yep. Can you talk about how you're thinking about connecting the dots between your marketing initiatives and the impact at the point of sale? and kind of the relationship with the dealers in that process?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that one. And I think it's an interesting thing that we have in automotive. I think the first thing is once we get the closed loop, that helps us understand it. And we can then start to understand, are there differences in geographies or dealerships or whatever? We're working a lot. There's some things where we have pretty seamless data integration, but we're really working on having better data integration between us and the dealers so they understand. Like we're launching something right now. It's called our digital retail platform. Mm-hmm. It's an online sales tool where a customer starts to configure a vehicle online. That information goes over to the dealership, so no one has to repeat anything from a customer perspective. The dealer doesn't have to re-enter. And then that actually goes all the way into our ordering system. So you can complete the transaction and get your car into the ordering system all from one thing. That's a good enabler. We still definitely have, you know, there's a lot of differences between dealerships. And so we're really working. We have a lot of consumer-based initiatives internally to say, how do we make sure that this luxury experience, whether you're talking to us on the mobile app, on the web, or in a dealership, is really consistent and at a luxury level?
Right. So Joanna O'Connell shared a stat earlier today around the disconnect between the CEO's view of the extent to which the company or brand is really customer-centric and delivering on that promise versus the reality that a CMO may understand in terms of that. Where do you think you are in that journey?
We're on the journey. We're on the journey. We're all on the journey, right? I think, again, to the conversation that we were having a second ago, all too often we are having conversations with customers based on our organizational view of the world and not on that person's view of how they're interacting with us. And so I think what we're really trying to move towards and get to is a single view of the customer. Because we have so many. Once we have that single view, to really make sure that marketing is being the customer's advocate and saying, look, this person just got 50 emails this week.
Right.
So how are we going to like make sure that that's not happening anymore and that person has a better experience? So I think, again, if you got 50 emails this week, I'm really sorry. We know we're working on it. But it's definitely a journey, but we're very aware of it.
Can you talk a little bit about the mobile app strategy that GM is taking?
I love our mobile app. I absolutely love our mobile app. So we are really looking for the mobile app to be, if that's how a person wants to interact with us, to have that be our portal. We have really great functionality today, and it's really growing. I always use the example of winter in Detroit. In the morning, I wake up, I get ready, I'm about to go to my car, I turn on my car. When I come downstairs, my car knows that it's 20 degrees out. My heated seats are on, my heated steering wheel's on, and I get in, the windows are defrosted, it's great, I start going to work, and then we have a connection too with Alexa in our Starbucks app, so I can it knows I'm going to Starbucks.
Oh, that's awesome.
My car. So I think that's a quick example of where the mobile app is today. I think especially as you start to look at EVs and you're looking at route planning, we have route planning in there. Where are you going to be able to charge? What's along the route? So I think just really looking at that.
And does that tie into the dealer and service experience as well?
We're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I mean, that seems like a key platform to drive the customer-centric strategy.
Yep.
I spoke at the opening about some of the challenges created by the fragmentation in consumer data. How do you think about the internal challenge that you face at GM in terms of the various views of the consumer, and how are you beginning to address that?
Yeah, I think there's a few different ways that we're looking at the fragmentation. The first one is what I was talking about, our internal systems, and we're really working on how do we pull those together in a way that we can have more meaningful interactions with consumers and not come from this org view out to the customers.
Right.
The other side of that, I think, is really with the partners we work with. And it's funny, I think if you would have asked me 7 years ago, I would have said, well, the walled gardens are going to have to open up because that's where the world's going. And
that's
the opposite has happened, and there's more walled gardens and it's getting harder. And that's the other one that I think we're really working with our partners on. How do we pull this together in the best way?
Right. There's been a lot of conversation today around zero party, first party, second party, third party data. How do you think about all those various forms of data in terms of your marketing strategy?
I really, and again, I said, like, you know, I kind of take our partners' data as our data. I really like to look at the different types of data and figure out how do we, again, to this, how do we tie things together? How do we create an ecosystem that allows us to not have to talk as much about that? I mean, on the planning side, you do, right. But that it doesn't matter as much because we've created this ecosystem where, you know, our data coming in with dealer data, coming in with partner data helps us make sense.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit more about the role that marketing measurement plays, not just in terms of you being successful in your job, but you being able to kind of explain to the rest of the organization that in fact, you know, you are being a good steward of GM's investment of marketing?
Yeah, I think that is a very huge, important question right now. And I think where we are today really allows us to have these conversations very well. I think a good, I'll give an example and then I'll kind of ladder up to what you're saying. A really good example of this is we've been talking a lot about EV advertising before a car comes out, or brand advertising versus product and what does it do? And through the tools that we have, we're able to say, we did this Lyric campaign, and I know Lyric is sold out right now.
Yeah, sorry, can't buy a Lyric.
Yeah, sorry, we don't have any Lyrics right now. But this actually drove this many Escalade sales, this many XT5 sales, this many XT4 sales. Being able to show that, improve that, and say, and these are incremental, we weren't going to get these, is really important and helps us have a better conversation. That's a little example of how overall we're really showing what does the marketing investment do, and why are we spending this money in a way that is driving the business and driving the results that we need.
Right. I'm not going to share that stat publicly, but I know we've done some work with you on the cost of acquisition of a brand new customer versus someone who's already been a customer of the brand. And it's obviously dramatically lower if they already have some level of brand loyalty. And brand loyalty in the auto industry is kind of at an all-time low overall. So it kind of implies the need for a significant investment in building up some level of brand loyalty.
Yeah, we're actually doing okay on brand loyalty right now. Cadillac's been on a good upswing. But that being said, I think it's so true. And I think it's not even like low-hanging fruit isn't what I want to say. It's almost like out of respect for these people who are your customers, you should be doing things to make sure that they're happy
right.
So that you don't have to go out and get new customers. I mean, that's the respect that we owe them. But I think that it is obviously, too, the easiest way is you're looking at how are we going to meet these sales goals.
Right.
The existing people are so important.
And obviously, with an existing customer, you know where they are in the life cycle of their prior purchase.
Yep.
So you're in a good position to understand whether or not they're kind of ready for you to consider a new sale to them.
Yep.
So, given your strategy around really being consumer focused, what is your strategy for driving alignment, both in strategy and execution, with the partners that you work with?
So it depends on the partner, but I think like if we're looking at from buying or measuring media, we're really trying to make sure that everyone's taking our people-based approach. How are we going to make sure that we're hitting the people? Like it's an interesting thing that we've switched the conversation over the past couple of years. And if I think about, again, 7 years ago, the conversation that I was having with everyone is how good is your lookalike model? And what can you bring to the table from a data perspective? That's actually gone now. Because as I said, I have this file of future customers. I know through the modeling that I've done who I want to target. So it's not even helpful anymore. And so as we work with partners, that's what I need. How can you help me reach these people? How can you help me reach the people I haven't reached? How can I engage with them? Like back to what I said in the beginning, here's our data, here's what we know about them. How can I engage with them in a way that's meaningful, that's going to make them like the brand more?
Right, yeah. Okay. All right, so two final questions. If you were to kind of go back in time a couple of years and think about the biggest challenges that you were facing, what would you most be pleasantly surprised by that you've achieved in the last couple of years?
I think the biggest thing is, and it's funny because I sometimes still panic about it, is like looking at like our strategy before was so cookie-based, right? And it really was. That just is just how we were interacting with the world, right? I think, and I've said this all along, but I think I didn't realize it all as it was happening, is when you have a problem like this and there's a lot of smart people and there's a lot of money at stake, you're going to get really good solutions. So, like, have I been, like, was I worried about cookie deprecation? Like, definitely, and it hurts the analytics, it's harder. But I think when I look at where we are now, and like you take the step back because we've been in the middle of it, we've actually done a really good job. Like, is it perfect? No, like we still have some big steps to get there, but I don't feel lost.
Okay.
And I think that's like pretty amazing.
So if you feel well prepared for the eventual deprecation of the cookie, maybe happening in the next year.
Yes.
Okay, all right. And then the follow-on question is, what are the biggest challenges you're facing today, the unsolved challenges, that if we were to fast forward a couple of years in the future, you'll be happy to hear you've successfully resolved?
When I have a new definition for reach and frequency.
Okay.
When I know and I can say, here's the people I haven't reached, how do we get them?
Okay. But back to your earlier comment, though, like that isn't an answer so much as it is kind of an input back into the feedback loop. Like what you're trying to achieve is how do you ensure that you are effectively balancing your reach and frequency across the entire population you're trying to reach?
Yeah, so that I get to 100% reach, basically.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Wow, thanks for listening to our Brave New Worlds multi-part series. If you do want to watch these sessions on demand or share them with your team, please head over to bravenewworlds.transunion.com. And stay tuned for more of these sessions on NoHype, wherever you get your podcasts.